Now we're holding on Pei Gimel Amud Aleph, fifth line. And we're in the middle of thing that in our Mishnah we said that a person is carrying a barrel of wine or whatever from one place to another and it breaks. The Tanakhama, which is Rebbe Meir, said that he has to swear either way, whether he's a Shem Chinam or a Shem Sachar, he has to swear and then he'll be potter. To swear, that is, that he wasn't Peshe. Then we had Rebbe Lozer saying that also I agree they have to swear, but I can't understand why. And in the Gemara we had a Braisa where we had a third opinion. Rebbe Yehuda said that Shem Chinam and Shem Sachar have their respective rules about swearing versus not swearing. So now the question was that we find elsewhere where the mayor says just the very fact that a person tripped itself brands him as a pesheya because he should have been more careful and watched where he was going. So we have Rebbe Lozer explaining that in fact there are two different opinions what the mayor holds. So now in the Braisa, therefore, the three opinions are Rav Meir holding that Yishama, he has to swear, not that he wasn't Pesheya, because if he tripped, he was Pesheya, but rather he'd have to swear that something else happened that didn't involve him tripping. For example, somebody else banging into it or whatever. Then Rav Yehuda had said that Shem Chinam and Shem Asafa have their respective rules. And one thing we pointed out is that and then Rebbe Lozer said that how could it be that they both have the same rule? As Rebbe Meir is saying, yes, I learned from my Rebbe, and that it's so, but how is it possible they both have the same rules? First of all, Shem Chinam versus Shem Sachar, and second of all, even a Shem Chinam, if it was a flat, why aren't we distinguishing between whether it was flat ground or between whether there were other people over there who saw what happened and can testify about it?
We're also distinguishing between tripping and other pesheya.
We're also distinguishing between tripping and other things, yeah, because you were saying the mayor holds nikkal pesheya, that if he tripped, then automatically that means that that itself was a pesheya, because then he should have looked where he was going, yeah.
But he can be other pesheya and not have to pay.
No, so we're saying you have to swear that he wasn't pesheya. According to the mayor, swearing that he wasn't Pesheya would have to include, according to the mayor of the Braisa, again, according to the laws of the Amorah, who says there are two different opinions within what the mayor says, and so now, Rabchiba Abba Omer Rab Yechanan. Rabchiba Abba gives a different explanation in the name of Rab Yechanan to explain the stira in what the mayor is saying, here in our Mishnah, the mayor seems to, and in the Braisa, the mayor seems to be implying that just the fact that he tripped is not automatically a Pshia, and therefore he can swear that he wasn't Pesheya, meaning he can say, I tripped and the barrel broke, but that wouldn't be considered Pshia, whereas elsewhere we say that the mayor holds Nikal is Pesheya. So the Pshia Ba'aba, Amr Abirchanan, no, what it really is, yes, Nikal is Pesheya. Yes, the mayor holds Nikal Pesheya, but who is the Takanas Chachamim? But in this case, we have a special reason. The Chachamim made a Takana that he should have to swear, that he can swear and become Potter. Because if you're not going to say like that, then nobody is ever going to want to transport a barrel from one place to another for somebody else, because he's going to figure that it's very common, you know, especially back then, no paved roads or whatever. It was very common that a person might trip on the way, and if you're going to always say that he's a pesheya, then nobody's ever going to want to take on the job in the first place.
Is he doing it as a favor?
No, so that's the thing. If he's a Shem HaSachar, he's doing it as a favor, because he's a Shem HaSachar, he's being paid for it. But regardless, Shem HaChinam, we're talking about he's doing it as a favor, right? So now the question is, hey,
we're talking about Shem HaChinam and Shem HaSachar when you say.
Well, so Rav Meir is saying either way. Rav Meir is saying that the Ben Shem HaChinam, Ben Shem HaSachar, Yishava. That either way. So the question is then, Heichin Yishava. Well, then what is it? So how does he swear? Meaning, Tosfos says, the question would be like this. If we didn't know that there was this special Takanas Chachamim, then we would say, okay, he swears that he didn't carry it any differently than normal people would. You could have, for example, let's say the Noser Kalim on the Rif talk about, for example, I think the Baal Amor talks about, for example, that you can have, let's say, where he lowered it and carried it closer to the ground and therefore it banged against the ground or something. But now that we're saying that no matter what, he is always considered a Pesheya, but it's still Takanas Chachamim, then in that case, then what exactly is he swearing to? So what is he swearing? Omar Rava Shvur Shlev Kavana Shvartia. So Rava says in that case, what he swears is, according to this answer, he swears that I didn't break it deliberately. So in other words, again, Rashi also explains the question is that the The question is, now that we're saying that he's anyway a Peshea, then what is he swearing to? So the answer is he's swearing not that he wasn't Peshea, because we're going to say, yes, you were Peshea, but we're going to say that he didn't deliberately break it, and then that'll be enough to pat him. Okay, so that explains Rav Meir's opinion. But also Rav Yehuda Lemeima, now along comes Rav Yehuda and says, no, I hold, says Rav Yehuda, Nikalav Peshehu. We're not talking about a special Takanas Fachamim, says Rav Yehuda. We're talking about the ordinary Shavua that a Shomer has to take. Well, in that case, the usual rules apply. Shemachinam Yeshava, Nosisacha Yeshalim. So in that case, the Shemachinam would have to swear that he wasn't Peshea. The Nosisacha can't get away with that because he's Chayev for Gneva Vaveda and other things which are not own sin, and here, unless it was an onus, then he's going to have to pay. So each one is going to go according to his respective usual rules. So the Yehuda is going to say, there's no special takana over here. It's a regular case of a shomer. Okay. But also Rabbi Lozer Lameima, and then Rabbi Lozer comes along and says, here again, we're back to Rabbi Lozer the Tana, not Rabbi Lozer the Amora that we had earlier in the Sugya. So Rabbi Lozer says, "Ein Gemara k'Rav Meir." Yes, it's true. I learned from my Rebbeim and my Rav Meir that both Shem Chinam and Shem Sachar are potter as long as they swear. Utmeyani in Micholim Zevazel Shrava. Umihu, however. However, he says, I can't understand it. How could it be that both of them are going to have to swear? Now, the question is, and here, Reb Chiya Ba'aba is going to understand the question in a similar vein as the way Reb Elazar understood it. Because the whole reason why we have the two different explanations here in the Gemara is because we were worried about the contradiction within Reb Meir's opinion, whether Reb Meir holds Nitkal Peshea or not. Within Reb Yehuda's or Reb Elazar's opinion, it's more straightforward to understand what they're saying. So again, the question is, a Shemachinam sure is going to swear that he wasn't Peshea, and that's how it works. El Shemasachar Amay Mishtaba, why would a Shemasachar have to swear, Kile Posha Nami Bori Shalumi, even if he wasn't Peshea, as a Shemasachar, he's going to be chayav to pay either way. Meaning, in other words, that Rabbi Lozer does not hold. Now, like this, Rabbi Chiya Ba'aba had begun by saying that according to the mayor, there's a special takonas fachamim that to pater him, because otherwise nobody's going to want to transport a barrel for somebody else. So now Rabbi Lozer would disagree and say there was no such takana, and therefore therefore he's wondering what's the basis of this din. Now that's according to Rashi. The Ritva actually doesn't like that because why don't we assume that Rabbi Lozer also learned that there was a special takana, and then what's he wondering about? So the Ritva says no. Rabbi Lozer says sure there is a takana, but nevertheless if we say, but I disagree with, I and my Rebbeim disagree with Reb Meir, say Nitka Lav Peshea, so it can't be that the Takana is needed for a Shem Chinam, because a Shem Chinam anyway would be Potter as long as he wasn't Peshea, and tripping doesn't necessarily mean Peshea, according to Rebbe Lazar. So the question then would be, so if there was a Takana, obviously it must be on the Shem Sachar, so why is, so we're saying that, so in that case, why is Reb Meir saying Zevazei Yishova? Again, you have the distinction that with a Shema Sacha, not always is it going to be an onus. Sometimes it may indeed be Pshia. And he goes on to say, so even with a Shema Chinam, I can understand if it was sloped ground, then it's much easier for him to trip, and therefore it's much more likely to be an onus. If it was flat land, how could he swear that he wasn't Pshia? And especially on the Shema Sachar, how could he? And even where it was sloped ground, sure, where there's no proof, then where there's nobody else around to say one way or the other what happened, then a shvur would be enough. But if there are people around, then he ought to bring a raya. The potter, and then he'd be potter. The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, which we brought at the top of the Amud as well, Isi ben Yehuda Omer, that when the Posik says by a Shomer, it says that if something happens to the animal first by a Shomer Sacher, Ein Roya, if there's nobody who saw what happened, Shavua Hashem Tia Ben Shneim, then there should be a Shavua of Hashem between the two of them, implying Ho Yashroya. So the Pasuk is implying, so Isi Ben Yehuda, if somebody watched, if there was somebody there to see that there was an onus, Yavi Raya Vipatu, then we don't make him swear, instead he has to bring the Eidim. So therefore, Rav Elazar is saying, given all those distinctions, then how can we say as a blanket statement that Hashem Chinam always, that Hashem Chinam and Hashem Sacha always pay, always swear, and therefore they're potter? Why wouldn't we say that, that there are a number of cases where the Shema Sacha would have to pay, namely, if it was, whether there were Edim around and he can't bring the Edim, or whether it was on flat land, and then it was more, and then there's more reason to say that he was a Peshea. So Mao Shaw also says, in other words, that part of what we're saying is like this. Again, you have the point that the Ritva made, that according to Rabbi Lazar, so the Ritva makes the point that Rabbi Lazar would say there was a Takana Sfachamim, but he's going to understand the Takana differently. Mao Shaw says apparently Rabbi Lazar disagrees and says there was no Takana Sfachamim in the first place. Well, then in that case, so maybe Rabbi Lazar can hold that Nitka Peshea. And therefore, then it's very straightforward to understand why he would wonder how it is that either of them could swear. Never mind the distinction between Shem Chinam and Shem Sacher. He would be saying, if Nitka Peshea and doesn't hold the Takanas Chachamim, then why is there a Shavua over here? Shouldn't they both be chayav to pay? So Mao Shaw says, because we have in Bava Kama, we learned about the case, which we mentioned earlier in the sugya, we mentioned on the bottom of the previous Amud, about a case where a person dropped a jug of water or whatever in the Shas Rabim and it broke, and now he didn't clean up the pieces, as he's chayav for what happens if somebody else gets injured by the pieces or slips on the water or whatever, or is he potter? If that was the case, then Rabbi Lazar would disagree in that case as well. But since he doesn't, then that implies that he understands that he understands from his Rebbeim there's some particular thing about this din that makes it different than that one. So therefore that forces Rav Chiya bar Abba to say that Rav Elazar has to be saying why is there in the case of a Shema Sachar there should be various things where he would be chayav and he can't get away with the Shavua even if we say there is a Takana. So we have two different ways, in short, of explaining this three-way machlokas tanoim, whether we say that a mayor holds nitkal peshea or whether he holds nitkal lav peshea, is going to affect what we mean when Rabbi Lazar, when the mayor says both of them will swear. According to Rabbi Lazar, there are in fact two different versions of what the mayor said. According to Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, the mayor would say that he's a peshea, but we have a special Takanas Chachamim, otherwise nobody's going to want to transport barrels for somebody else. And then we have Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Lazar's respective opinions, which are basically the same according to both of them. Okay. So now the Gemara tells a couple of cases that involve Isi ben Yehuda's din. There was a person once who was transporting a barrel of wine in the main street or the main square of Mechuzah, which is Rava's city. Rashi translates Ristika as Rechava, which means like the town square or something. Whatever, it was a big public place.
Mechuzah was a big city.
Mechuzah itself was a big city, and Rava was the Rav and the Rosh Yeshiva over there, and now this guy was in the main square of that.
Oh, yeah. They moved the yeshiva from Pumbedisa?
Yes, in Rava's times, they moved the main yeshiva of Pumbedisa, moved to his city of Mechuzah, yes.
Who died? Abayim?
That's Abayim, that's the way. So this guy was transporting a barrel of wine in the Ristika, in the main square of Mechuzah. The Tavra Beziza de Mechuzah, he broke it by accident against a ledge that was sticking out of a wall in the street over there in Mechuzah. Also a Kamei de Rava, so he came to Rava, where they came to Rava for a Din Torah. Omalei, so Rava tells him, Ristika de Mechuzah Shechiki Bar Inchi, there are many people in that square of Mechuzah, so there must have been somebody, so how did it come about that you banged the Chavis into it? Was it that you tripped? Was it that you weren't looking where you were going? Was it whatever? So go bring a proof, and then you'll be potter, meaning, in other words, we're not going to make you swear, you're going to have to bring the Edim one way or the other, and based on that, we will see what the din is.
They're not even going to let him swear.
They're not even going to let him swear. We have to have Edim. Now, here you have, by the way, a difference in Girsa among the Rishonim. The Rif and also the Rosh have a girsa over here that they tell him, go bring Edus, deloy poshaya, go bring araya, deloy poshata, that you were not poshaya. So in other words, so the Rif and the Rosh explained that actually there would be a case where he would swear. If there weren't Edim, then we would say, we would say that he would have to swear that he wasn't Peshea. Now, according to the Priyava Abba's statement before, we would say it doesn't matter. Even if he was Peshea, Takonis Chachamim, that he just has to swear that he didn't break it deliberately. So now the Rif is explaining that Rava is saying not like that, that that would be only according to the mayor. Rava would hold the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, nikalav pesheya. It's considered an oinus. Therefore, his shvur would be the ordinary kind of shvur that he wasn't pesheya. Because according to Rabbi Yehuda, there's no according to Rabbi Yehuda. We don't need to resort to a takanas hachamim. We just say the regular rule, asher mechinim is potter as long as he wasn't pesheya. Tripping itself is not pesheya. Therefore, he swears that he wasn't pesheya, and that's that.
According to that,
Nikal is not Peshea, and Rava, according to that, is passing like that. Meanwhile, the Bala Mur disagrees with that and says that the Girsa in the Gemara should not have the words Deloy Peshaita, which would be the Girsa that we have in front of us, that Amban and Milchomos defends against that and then upholds what the Rif is explaining. So yes, you have two different ways of explaining when Rava is telling him swear, what is he swearing to? That he wasn't Peshea, is he swearing that he wasn't Peshea, meaning in other words that he carried it in the normal way, or is he swearing even that he may have been Peshea, because he called Peshea, but that he didn't break it deliberately. Or at least that he didn't carry it in an unusual way. For example, again, the Bala Mor brings up a point over there that let's say, for example, he might say that he carried it below his shoulders. He carried it too close to the ground and therefore it banged into something, let's say.
So that's worse than Peshea.
That would be a different kind of Peshea, yeah. That would be a different. Nitkal, we could say is Peshea or not Peshea if he tripped. But if he carried it in a careless way, then that would be a different kind of Peshea. And even if the mayor held Nitkal lav Peshea, or even the other Tanoim who hold Nitkal lav Peshea, might be Mechayivim in that case. Yeah. The point is anyway that Rava is telling him because there are Edim, then you have to bring a Raya. So again, what the Raya would be, do they have to bring a Raya that he wasn't Peshea, or do they have to bring a Raya that he carried it normally?
When they say Peshea, they're meaning Peshea within their masgeret.
Whatever Peshea is.
So there could be something where the guy doesn't do it deliberately, but he was so careless, it's worse than Peshea.
Maybe. I mean, for example, he's carrying it too close to the ground. Yeah, would be an example of that. Yeah. So Omale Rab Yosef Bray, so Rab Yosef, Rava's son, asks him, Kaman, who are you paskening like in that? You see, are you going like Isi ben Yehuda? Isn't he a Das Yochid? Omale, Rava says, hey, ki Isi, Usviraman Kavasei. Yes, I'm going like Isi, that where there's a Raya, then you have to bring a Raya. And the halacha is in fact like him, that where there's Edom available, then you have to bring Edom. The Rambam, in fact, brings in that connection an interesting point when it comes to, for example, dinim where an ox gores or whatever, you need Edim Ksherim over there when possible to see what happened. And the Rambam makes a point. You would think such things are going to happen in the barns or in the fields or whatever. Who are you going to have? You're going to have Avodim who are going to be around to see it or whatever. So therefore, maybe you shouldn't need Edim in the first place. Note, the Torah still stresses that where possible, you need Edim, and where not, we're still going to say Amotzim Chavel of Araya in cases of a sure injuring or whatever. To hear also, so Isi ben Yehuda is saying that wherever Edom are available, then we're not going to allow him to swear. To hear also, the Rif explains, in other words, what we mean is, your Shavua won't help. You can swear all you want, but if there's a place where Edom are available, unless you bring those Edom, you're not going to be potter. Another example, Ahu Gabra de Omale Lachavre, a person says to somebody else, Zil Zabin li Aramea Dani Chamra, go buy for me 400 barrels of wine.
Wow.
Also Zobinle, so he went and bought 400 barrels. Losoif also Lakame, later on, the Shliach comes back and tells the Mishaleach, Omale, Zvini Loch Aramea Dani Chamra, I bought you the 400 barrels of wine, the Takifulahu, but all of them went sour. So meaning, in other words, he's telling the Mishaleach that I'm washing my hands of this. You're going to have to take it up with the guy who sold me the wine, because he obviously sold defective wine or something. also the Kamei de Rava, so it came for a din Torah in front of Rava. Omalei, and Rava says, Arameh Dani Chametz Kifi, when 400 barrels of wine go sour, that's a significant amount, Kola Islay the Milsa, there must be a coil about it. It should be easy to find Edim that when the wine went sour. So did it go sour before you bought it? And in that case, then Rashi explains. In other words, now what happens is you might have that you bought it as vinegar, figuring that then you're going to pocket the difference. Here, the guy gave you enough money for 400 barrels of wine, so you're thinking to yourself, you know what? Let me go buy 400 barrels of vinegar, and then I'll pocket the difference in value between wine.
$100.
Yeah, let's say whatever. Or is it that in fact that legitimately you bought it as wine and then you bought it as wine and then later on it turns sour? So you're going to be able to find Edim to be able to establish the thing. So zil I see raya de meikra ki mezabnis lahu. So go bring a proof that when you bought them chamra mal yahava, it was good wine. If that, and then you will be potter from paying. So what would they do in practice
when they sell wine?
So in practice when they sell wine,
they could smell
the wine, right?
They would have an expert that smells.
Yeah, you would have an expert smell it. In fact, the Gemara mentions in Ksubas that Kauna, one of the Uriyamiroyim, used to do that. Yeah. There is something we learned about in the previous perek in Ezur Neshech, that you can have something like when you buy a bunch of barrels of wine and some of them go sour a few months later, it means that the ones that went sour to begin with, they had something in them, they had bacteria or whatever in them that are going to make them become sour later. So therefore, maybe an expert would be able to tell that in advance.
Yes, you're getting 400. You better have a nice
time. And actually, that's the Nemuka Yosef, the Raivet and the Nemuka Yosef explain. What's the coil exactly? When a person finds out that so much wine went sour, he's not just going to take it quietly. He's going to make a public spectacle of it. So Rava is saying that bring Edim, that when you first found out, then you will be potter. Otherwise, it means that there was a period of time when you knew that it was vinegar. So the Raivet also adds details in that. Basin would have to check how much time passed, in fact, between the buying and the discovering that it was vinegar. Because obviously if it was right after, it means he bought vinegar. The point is also that Raivet says doesn't necessarily mean the Shliach is going to have to pay if it turns out that not, but it means that he's going to have to be the one to do the din Torah with the seller. So you have a lot of details in that, but anyway, so he tells him, bring a raya, bring edim, that it was good when you bought it, and then you'll be potter. Meaning you'll be potter from paying, or as the Raivet points out, you'll be potter from having a din Torah against the seller, etc. So again, omale Rav Yosef Bray, so again, Rav Yosef, Rava's son, asks him, keman, who are you paskin like, ke'isi, omale ein, ke'isi, usviruman tabasei, and we hold like him. So in short, the halacha is like Isi. Wherever it's possible to bring Edim, you have to bring Edim. Where it's a place where there are no Edim possible, then we follow the rules for what we do when there are no Edim. As the Rambam points out in the case, let's say, of a Shersh and Nogach, we may have to say Amotzi b'chaver l'baraya because we have no good Edim around. In cases like this, we're going to say that there are cases where he's in cases of Shomrim, there are various cases where he'll be able to swear. Okay. Now, continuing, getting back to this point of carrying barrels of wine. So again, we have to balance out the considerations. On the one hand, you hire somebody to carry, you have somebody carry a barrel of wine for you, he's a shomer, and you want him to have a certain degree of responsibility. On the other hand, as we said, the chachamim are concerned that you don't want to discourage people from carrying barrels of wine at all. So the Gemara says, asking Rav Chiya bar Yosef b'Sichra, Rav Chiya bar Yosef made a takona in the city of Sichra, where he was the Rav. He said, Hani de Doru Ba'agra. So it's like this. When you have people are transporting a barrel of wine, one way they can be using is they use a stick that's held by they use a stick that's held by two people. So Rashi describes the stick is bent in the middle. In order to hold the barrel, they have a curve to hold the curve of the barrel within it, and you put it on your shoulder, and then you can actually transport two barrels with you. So actually, it's like those old style water carriers. So you put the stick on your shoulder and you have the two barrels hanging on the two ends of it. So now you could have two people, you could have one person carrying it or two. The itvar. So now if you have one person
carrying that.
Yeah. So if the stick itself breaks, and therefore whatever you had on it, when it becomes, it gets broken, nishalim palga. Then Rabbi Bar Yosef made a takana, he has to pay only half. My timer, nofish lachad, because carrying it like that is really too much for one person, so you shouldn't have carried it alone. But on the other hand, the zut or the tray, but it's really too little to have two people for doing it. So therefore, it's normal enough. It's true that really the right way to do it would be to have each person carry one barrel, but in practice it would be like a waste of effort. It would be a waste. People would consider it a waste of money to hire two workers for that when you could have one worker carry it with a stick like that, like those old style water carriers.
One person can use that stick.
That's the point. We're not saying rather like a water. The old style water carriers is they'd have one thing on each side. Here, Rashi is describing it's one in front of him and one in back of him. He puts the stick on his shoulder. So on the one hand, it was careless of him to do it by himself. On the other hand, he could say that, you know what, if I had to hire somebody else, then it wouldn't really be worthwhile. So the Priya Bar Yosef held Kodavla Onus, Kodavla Priya. So it's sort of like halfway between Onus and Priya, and therefore therefore he would pay half. In other words, the Ritva explains, were it not for that, we would say it's a suffix and Hamotzi Mechaveh El Avarai.
So one person puts it like that
with one hanging behind him and one in front.
Put it like this, and they're both going in the middle.
If they're carrying two people, then right, they'd be walking in the middle, right? On the other hand, the digor, on the other hand, continues Rav Chiya Bar Yosef. If, on the other hand, he's carrying with a digor, so Rashi describes also, this is also a similar kind of thing with a stick, but the difference is the stick is forked at one end, you tie to it the amount that two people could normally carry, you put your neck, Rashi describes, between the two forks, and it's going on both of your shoulders. So in English, they call it a thing, a trevoir. It comes from a word that French explorers use or something. Yeah. So basically you imagine so it's sort of dragging behind him.
You'd have to see a picture, I guess.
But yeah. So what goes on his neck is something like a yoke. Then you have the full weight, unlike the previous case where the stick is on his shoulder, is hanging half in front and half in back. Here you have the stick is hanging behind him, and Rashi describes in particular when he wants to take a break, then he lowers the stick and places the end of it on the ground.
I started writing it.
So you can look it up from there. So now Rabbi Bar Yosef says, if you're carrying it with a digor and then it breaks, Mishalim Kula, so it's basically like a contraption that's hitched up to the back and then, drags behind
you.
Rashi describes that the end of it is very long behind you. When you want to rest, you actually make the end of it rest on the ground. But otherwise, it's like a sledge sort of, which is dragging along the ground. So now, if he carries something with that and it breaks, Mishalim Kula, then Rav Chiya Bar Yosef says, then you're going to have to pay the same thing. Then you're going to have to pay the whole thing because that's really careless to do that by itself. That's obviously carrying way too much for one person to carry. That's the amount where it would be quite reasonable to have two people carry it. You wouldn't say, unlike in the case with the stick, that it's something too much for one and not enough for two, and therefore Rav Chiya Bar Yosef says in that case you'd have to pay the value of the entire barrel. Okay. The Gemara tells, Rav Baba Chonan, or there's different gyosois of here exactly what the name is, Rav Baba Chonan, Rav Barab Huna, whatever, anyway. He had some porters who were transporting a barrel of wine for him, and they broke it. And Rashi explains that they were actually Peshea. So there was a few possibilities. It could be that it was flat land. It could be that they were using a digla, this trevoir, like we were just saying, whatever the case, the point is they were Peshea. And they broke his barrel. So shokel leglimayu. So Rabbi Baba Chanan took their coats as a in order to pay off. That this way he'll sell the coats and he'll earn back the money back. Also omru l'Rav, they came to complain to Rav. Now usually in the Gemara when we have a din Torah, it's also a kamei to Rav. Meaning they came to Rav for a din Torah. Here it's not a din Torah. They realize that in principle they're chayav to pay, but they're asking Rav to help Rav have rachmanis on them. Omrulei, so Rav tells Rav Baba Chanan, Chavlehu glimayhu, give them back their coats. Omrulei, so Rav asks him, Dina Ochi, is that supposed to be the din? The fact is, they were Peshaya, and I'm fully entitled to compensation from them. Omrulei, so Rav says, Ain, because of the pasuk of Man Telech B'derech Tovim, in order that you should go in the ways of the good, meaning that you have to act Lifnim Meshur Sadin. Yes, you're right that you would be. You're right that they should be chayav to pay you, but nevertheless, you should act. You should act lifnim meshur hadin. So Maharsho actually explains over here that it may be not like Rashi. Rashi is saying that they were Peshaya, and nevertheless Rav is telling him to do the lifnim meshur hadin. An interesting point is actually the whole Sefer Mishlei is Shlomo's Proverbs for life, and there's very little in there that's about strict din, what you have to do and what you don't have to do. Shlomo doesn't need to be teaching us that. You look in the Torah. Mishlei, a lot is things. It's kind of like the Pirkei Avos of Tanakh. It's telling you things that are milui dechasidusa. So therefore, so Rav is quoting him a pasuk from Mishlei and telling him that you have to act the Fnim Meshuras Adin. Anyway, again, Rashi explained that the case was that they were Peshaya, and Rav is saying, nevertheless, go the Fnim Meshuras Adin. Maharsho explains not necessarily. Maybe they weren't actually Peshaya. So maybe they weren't actually Peshaya, so Rashi may explain, like we said before, about the Rif and the Rosh, that the Takanas Chachamim is only, that the Takanas Chachamim was never to exempt him from Peshia, only when it was Ba'onis, and here they're showing Resacha, they need to prove it was Ba'onis, and they can't, and therefore Rav Abachana is going to take away their garments, and therefore, and therefore they're going to be chayav. So now Maharsho explains like this. In other words, what happened was that here's what happened. Rav Avachanan took their garments and they came and told Rav, right? He's telling Rav Avachanan, saying that Rav is saying, I hold that even when they were Peshaya, we're still saying Takanas Chachamim, so we don't discourage people from carrying barrels, and therefore, unless they broke it for Kavanah, then they're going to be potter. Rav Avachanan says, wait a minute, what happened? I thought the Takanas Chachamim was not about Pshia, like the way that the Rif and the Rosh explain. And Rav says, it's true, maybe technically that's so, but if Nimesh Rosh Hadin, you should return it to them anyway, and not say that, don't hold like the Rif and the Rosh, basically, that if they were Peshaya, then no matter what, they're always going to be Chayev, give it back to them anyway. Yoivlu, Rabba Baba Honan gave them back their coats. Omrulei, then they said to Rav, Aniyei Anan, we're poor people, but Tachinen Kol HaYoma, we worked a whole day, but Kafinen, and now we're hungry, but less one midi, and now we don't have anything, because now we're not getting paid for the job, of course, it's enough that we kept our coats, at least, but now, what are we going to do? Omrulei, so Rav tells Rav Baba Chanan, Zil Havagrai, who go pay them. Omrulei, so now Rav says, Dina Ochi, is that supposed to be the din? They didn't even finish the job properly. Omalei Ein, and he tells him yes, because as the pasuk finishes off, the same pasuk in Mishlei, Va'orchis Tzadikim Tishmer, you should observe the ways of the Tzadikim, which means, in other words, Samar Shah says, again, following his Shita, they weren't Peshaya, so you also, Tzadikim Yochubam, Poshim Yikosh Lubam. Had they been Poshim, then yes, you'd have a right to hold back their wages, but because they weren't Peshaya, and it wasn't Oinus, then therefore you should pay them. Rashi also makes the point that this is the end of the same pasuk, and Maharsho explains the reason why Rashi has to say that is because if it was a separate pasuk, then fine, you wouldn't really have a proof. Okay, so you could say that one way or the other. So fine. Orchas Tzadikim Tishmer is go lefnim Meshuras Hadin and return them, and no more than return them their coats. But since the first half of the pasuk is Laman Telech B'derech Tovim, and that already means to return them their coats, then the Orchas Tzadikim Tishmer must go beyond that, and you even have to pay them in a case like that. There is actually an interesting sicha in Chelek Yud Zayin that ever talks about when you say in Pirkei Avos Lefum Tzara Agra. The question is, what's the chiddush? Of course, a worker pays for you. A worker works for you. You have to pay him. So what's the chiddush that Hashem pays us? And part of the point that ever makes over there is you could even have the same way as we're saying in Dine Odom, where somebody did work for you and he ended up causing damage, and nevertheless you go to Pnim Rosh HaZadim, like Rav is telling Rav Chanan, and pay him. The same way we can have a case where we do avoda and sometimes even we're making things worse. An example that ever gives over there is a person makes a neder not to do something, and that in order to strengthen himself in mitzvahs, and then he goes and ends up being over on the neder. Nevertheless, okay, so he's still chayiv for the fact that he was over on the neder, but on the other hand, the Eved can still give him a reward for the fact that he took the trouble that he tried to fulfill the neder for a while, and that's from Tzara Agra, similar to what we're saying over here, Baruch HaSadikim Tishmer, that Hashem goes with us with Nimashur Sadin. Hadron Allah HaSelchers Omen. Continuing with the topics of employer-employee relations, the Mishnah says, "Asocher esapolim, person hires workers, v'omalehem lachashkim olaharim." And if now he's hiring them by the day or by the hour or whatever, unlike a kablon where he's hiring them by the job, so now he's setting their hours, v'omalehem lachashkim olaharim, and he tells them he wants them to be there earlier than normal, or he wants them to be later, he wants them to stay later than normal. So then, mokum shenogula shalala hashkum or shalala harid, if the local minhag is that people don't do that, that workers come at a certain time and they don't stay beyond a certain time, ain rashoy lekoifan, then he can't force them to do differently because, so Tosfos points out, if they made a tnai to begin with, sure, kol tnai shem momentayim, but if to begin with he hired them without specifying, and now that they've been hired, he wants to tell them that they have to come earlier or stay later, then he can't do that. Mishnah continues, b'mokim shenagu lozun, in places where the minhag is that the employer has to supply them with food, yozun, then he has to supply them with food. L'safik b'mesika, if there are places where the boss supplies them also with mesika, which Rashi translates as lifton, something to accompany the bread. So the basic food itself was bread. Lifton would be something to go along with the bread, something to spread on it, something to eat together, something to dip the bread in or whatever. So where there's a place where they have the minhag to supply that, you sap it, then you have to supply that. A kol k'minhag amadina, it all goes according to the local minhag.
Mesika
literally means sweetness. So here it means something sweet that they would eat with the bread.
Butter, maybe.
Yeah, something that would sweeten, that would make the bread taste better, yeah. So the Gemara tells the Mishnah tells a case. Ma'aser Rav Yochanan ben Masya sha'amar livnoi, seitz cholon apoyelin. Rav Yochanan ben Masya told his son, "Go hire us workers." Holacha posik lahem mizonis. So he went and found workers, and he also arranged with them that he's going to give them food, but he didn't say how much food he's going to give them. When the son came back to Rav Yochanan, Omaloi, his father tells him, "Bni, my son, afilu imata oisalem kisudas shloime b'shaitei, now that you obligated yourself to supply them with food, even if you were to give them like the size of shloime suda in his times," meaning when he was powerful and rich and ruling over before Ashmedai kicked him off the throne, "Lo yatsasi de chavos chayman," you wouldn't be yotze what you're obligated to them, "shein b'nei Avraham Yitzchak v'Yaakov," because they're children of Avraham Yitzchak v'Yaakov, and they deserve even more than what Shlomo gave. As the Gemara is going to explain later on, that proportionately what Avraham gave the Malachim is greater than what Shlomo gave his guests. So you're telling us, you're telling them you're going to supply them with food, so therefore, so that could imply any amount of food. It's an open-ended commitment. "Ela ad shalo yasfila b'malacha," so Rabbi Yochanan tells his son, before they begin the work, at which point it actually says it's only Dvorim Ba'alma, and therefore if we retract, then it's not considered Mechoser Amana, meaning if they already begin the work on the understanding that they're going to get some kind of, where they're thinking that they're going to get some kind of rich food, then you have a problem, that then you're breaking your condition with them. But now, when it's only words, then there's not yet an issue of Mechoser Amana, Rashi says, although actually Hagoy Sabach wonders about that, because earlier we said that Devarim Yeshra and Mechoser Amana, where there was a verbal commitment, then there is a Mechoser Amana from going back.
But it's a different kind of verbal commitment.
Maybe it's a different kind of verbal commitment, vague. Whether you're talking about buying and selling, right. It's true, it's vague. Right. Yeah, anyway. The point is, so before they begin the work, Seva Emor Lahem, go tell them, Amanasha Emor Chamalai, Elapas V'Kitnis Bovad. Go tell them that the only thing you can claim from me in terms of food is only bread and beef. Meaning that way it'll be clear that we're not giving them Sudas Shalom B'Shaite, and then if they want to work under those conditions, then fine, they accepted that. Reb Shimon Gamliel and Lahaya Tzarech Loima. So Reb Shimon Gamliel says he didn't even have to tell them that Hakolk Minigam Adina, because it would all go according to Minigam Adina. He wouldn't in the first place. He's arguing with Reb Yechanan and Masya, who would say that if you don't specify that, if you say Mizonis and don't specify, you're going to be on the hook for even more than Kesuda Shloima B'Shaita. Reb Shimon Gamliel says never bear in mind that Hakolk Minigam Adina, and even without specifying, it would be whatever you normally supply your rules.
Wonder what kind of beans they got.
I don't know. What kind of beans?
Cold, do you think?
I don't know. No idea. All right. So the Gemara says,
that's the most interesting part for me.
Okay.
That's okay.
And we'll get back to it on Daf Pei Zayin. We'll get back to it. That's the Shem on Daf Pei Zayin. We'll talk about it. Okay. So the Gemara asks, in the first part where we said that, if he tells them to come early or stay late, that he can't because it's a place where the minig is not to. And Einar Shoy Lekoipan. So the Gemara says, Pshita. Isn't that obvious? And the answer is, loy tzricha, the chidush is, to tofel who are agrayu, suppose he's paying them extra. As we learned in the previous perek, you might have, for example, places where day workers collect, let's say, normally 3 zuz per day, and he's offering them 4. So, ma'u detema, omelahu, you would think that he could tell them, hod tefai lahu agrayu, the reason why I added, the reason why I'm paying you extra, adaitidim, kanmitu, machshachitu, bahadoi, is, because I understood that it was supposed to be aldas, that you're going to come earlier than normal or stay later than normal. Kamash Malan, therefore the Tana tells us, no, the Omrulay, they can answer him back. Hi, the Tofas Lan, the fact that you gave us extra, pay, Adait Dabdin Allah, Abita Shapirta, was on the understanding that we're going to do extra good work for you, not that we're going to stay later. The Meiri actually brings that to what happens if they didn't do better work. So one way of looking at it is, in fact, yeah, then he can deduct from their pay accordingly. The other way of looking at it is that the Meiri says that yes, Shemirim, that no, because they can say we tried as hard as possible to do the better work, it didn't work out yet. Omer Shlokish. So Shlokish says in this connection, when a worker comes in, meaning when he's returning from the job and returning back to the city, mishaloi, then the extra time has to come out of his, time. Rashi says tzorach levater, that he has to forego some time of his own, meaning, in other words, when we say lahashtim or laharev in the Mishnah, what it means is that the work day is considered to be from alois hashachar until tzeis hakachavim. There's a pasuk in Nehemiah that expresses that, where it says there that when they were working on rebuilding the walls of Yerushalayim, they were working from alois hashachar until tzeis hakachavim, and the Gemara in Berachos explains that that's the halachic definition of the day. Actually, Tosfos says no. It's from Netzach Hama until Tzeis. In any case, the point is, so when he's coming home, in other words, you can't say, well, it's going to take me half an hour to get home, therefore I get to leave half an hour before Tzeis. No, he should forego that, and he's going to leave. He's going to finish the job only at Tzeis and then start walking home. According to Rashi, this is a vitur. This is that Rish Lakish is saying he should forego that extra time. According to Tosfos, it's not so much a vitur. It's rather that is how the halacha is, that he has to work until Tzeis HaKachavim. Bitzi also, when he leaves the city in the morning, Michel Balabais, that time comes out of the time of the Balabais, meaning, again, he's beginning the job at Hanetzach Hama, means that then he only has to leave his house at Hanetzach Hama, and then he's going to be at the work site however long it takes after Hanetzach Hama for him to get over there. That's a point of Rashi. Tosfos has a long discussion about that and how it compares with other Gemaras. We have, for example, so in the case of building the walls of Yerushalayim, where they were working from Alois HaShachar, they were putting in extra time. They wanted to get the work done as fast as possible. It's the walls of Yerushalayim, after all. Their enemies were harassing them and so forth. So therefore, you could say they were doing extra, but technically they only would have been required to do only from Monday. So anyway, Tosfos compares it with various other Gemaras and talks about the details about it. There's a long Tosfos, yeah. Tosfos ends up explaining, also brings from Rabbeinu Hananel, if the other way around. Knisoso doesn't mean like Rashi says, when he leaves the job and comes back to the city, but on the contrary, when he goes in to the job, Mishaloi, then he has to give extra time to the Balabais. He leaves before Netzach Hama, he leaves his house at Alois HaShachar, and by the time he's there at the work site, is Netzach Hama. He'll have to daven on the job. The Mishnah and Brachas talks about those details. Yeah. When he leaves at the end of the day, Bitsi also, Rabbi Hananel explains, means when he leaves the job at the end of the day. So then Michel Balabais, then he's allowed to leave a little bit earlier than Tzeis HaKachavim, and he's leaving because then that way he'll be home by Tzeis. Okay. And the Shlokish says, Shenema, which it says in the pasuk, Kizra Hashemesh Yerseifun, when the sun shines, then they, the wild animals that are roaming around at night, are gathered in, they go and then bed down in their dens or whatever. The Omar Noisim Yerbotsun, they crouch down and they go to sleep in their dens, in their holes, or whatever habitations they live in. And then the pasuk continues, Yetze Odom Mefalo, then a person goes out to his work, Balavadose Ade Orev, and he goes out to his job and to his work until the evening. So we see, in other words, and the pasuk says, when do the animals roam around at night? Then Tizra Hashemesh. So we see that people go to work at Netzachama and they work until Tzitzik Chachavim. Because in other words, the point is, the pasuk is saying you have a certain part of the day which is reserved for the wild animals, and you have another part that's reserved for people to go do their work. So the Gemara says, why do we need a pasuk for that? And how can Rish Lakish say a general rule on that? The Lechzi Heichen Nikigi, let's just see how the minig is in a local place, whatever Kapok minig amidina. And the answer is Be'ir Chadasha. You're talking about, let's say, a new city was established and they don't yet have a local minig. Well, the Gemara says the people of the city came from somewhere, Venechzi Meheicha Kalsu, so let's see where the people in town came from. If you have a bunch of people that moved, if you have people who moved from one city and seceded from that city or whatever and established a new city, then they follow their old Minhag HaMedina. By the way, you have examples like that nowadays. You have, for example, the city of Petach Tikva in Eretz Yisrael was established by people from Yerushalayim, and Ada Yemazeh, in certain things, they follow the Minhagim of Yerushalayim. Among others, in when to light Shabbos candles, how long before Shkia, and certain other things where they follow Minhag Yerushalayim in that. So the Gemara answer is Bin Kutori. You're talking about it wasn't people from one place, like they are Petach Tikva being settled by Yerushalman. You're talking about to begin with, it was a bunch of people who came from different places and all gathered together and decided to found a new city. So therefore, so there's no Minhag HaMakom yet, and there's no specific Minhag HaMakom of where they came from. So therefore we can't go by Minhag HaMakom, and therefore Rish Lakish is telling us what the default rule should be. Or another possibility, you could even talk about a place where there is a standard minhag, but the Omalahu, Dagritali Kapil Daraisa. Suppose the Balabas tells them when he first hires them, I'm gonna hire you on the terms that it says in the Torah, rather than according to Minhag HaMedina. So then, in that case, we have to know what are the terms of the Torah. So Rish Lakish is telling us like that from Netzachama until Tzeis, and you have the different understandings of Rashi and Rabbeinu Hananel, what it means in terms of when they have to leave home to get to the work site, and when they're able to leave the work site to head home. Okay. So now that we brought this pasuk, the pasuk Tizra Hashemesh Yerseifun, and the previous pasuk is that Hashem makes it dark and then the animals roam around. So now the Gemara is going to bring some agadta on that subject, which is going to be a sugya of agadta running over a couple of blocks. Starting, the pasuk says, Dorash Reb Zera, Ra'amin the Toni Reb Yosef, Reb Zera Darshin, or some say Reb Yosef Torah Braisa, my dichtiv, what does the pasuk mean? Toshes choshech vihi loyla, you make it dark, Hashem, you set darkness, vihi loyla, and it becomes night, bois sumus kochaise yar, and at that time, all the wild animals of the forest roam around. So now we know, for one thing, choshech is loyla, vayikra lekim la'oyom, vila choshech kor loyla. So why does the pasuk have to say, toshes choshech vihi loyla? Means zeha oylma zeh, shu doyma la'layla. The pasuk is hinting at this world, which is compared to the night. Because in this world, it's not always clear what the truth is. It's like during the nighttime when we don't know the truth of what's true and what's imaginary and whatever. So a person doesn't have that kind of clarity of gilui of the course and to know what's right and wrong. When the pasuk continues, all the wild animals roam around. That means el rishoyim shaboy. That refers to the rishoyim in this world that they roam around and they prowl around. Shadurim and lachaya shabiyar. They're like wild animals in the forest that they go around and they. Hashem gives them the opportunity. Rashi says that Hashem gives them the ability and the opportunity to go and act as Rishoyim, and not necessarily going to punish them on an ongoing basis. So they can be Rishoyim for a while and they seem to get away with it. Marsha also adds, you have actually psukim that compare them, that compare them. You have rishoyim that act like wild animals. You have psukim and tilim that talk about it, for example, and they go and they prey on the poor people, etc. So that's in Olam Hazeh. But then the pasuk continues, Tizrach Hashemesh Yosefun. Then when the sun rises, they're gathered in. They disappear. The Elmo Nosem Yerbotzun, and they crouch down in their layers. So Tizrach Hashemesh LaTzadikim. When it says the sun shines, that means for tzadikim. So therefore, they have the schus that La'asid Lavoi. They're going to have the sun of Elakos is going to shine clearly in the world. So then, at that point, Yosefun HaRishoyim LeGehenim. At that point, the Rishoyim are going to be gathered in, meaning they're going to go and get their punishment in Gehenim. So to a certain extent, it means after 120, after they live out their life, but it also means La'asid Lavoi. In particular, you have the Gemara that mentions in a few places where Shlokish says the famous expression that in Olam Abba, there's not going to be Gehenim, but the sun. Hashem will take out Chama Minartika, and the Rishoyim will be harmed by it. So that goes together with over here. Chizra Hashemesh, when Hashem makes that sun of a clear well, of course, shine, then automatically Yer safe, and then that's going to destroy the Rishoyim. And when it says the Elmo Noisim Yubotsun, when it says they crouch down in their dens, that doesn't mean they're the Shoyim. That means tzaddikim. There's not a single tzaddik who will not have a place in Gan Eden according to his cover, according to what he deserves. And then when the pasuk continues, Yetzer Adam LaFaloi, a person goes out to his work, meaning Yotzu Tzadikim LaKabel Schorim, meaning Tzadikim will come out in order to receive their reward. One point of high coming out may be that they may even have had to have been in hiding all this time. They might have been Tzadikim Nistorim, where nobody knows that they were. But whatever, now they're going to come out and receive their reward. And what kind of Tzadikim? V'lave Dose Ade Orev, when the pasuk continues, when they work until the evening, V'mishli Hishlam Ave Dose Ade Orev, when you're talking about a person who fulfilled his avodah until the evening, meaning until the evening of his life, until he passes away. Maosha points out also the word orev can mean sweet, as in the shachavta ba'orvash nasecha. So it refers to the death of tzaddikim, which is sweet to them because they have misas nishika. There's also, Ben Yehoyada points out it can also be meloshin arevos. As long as a yid is alive, ko yisrael, arevim zelazeh, and when he passes away, he loses that arevos, so that's also v'labedosa ade orev. There's also in Hayom Yom where it has a long vote on that from the Friedrich Rebbe about the deeper meaning of this pasuk Yetzar and Lefal of Labadosa Ade Orev, that we're day workers. It's a thing from the Rebbe Hashem that we're our job is to bring light into the world, and therefore it's a different Gemara, and therefore V'labidosa Ade Orev, that our job is to be Koriso and Reb Zelazen. We're all responsible to bring that light of all, of course, into the world. Okay. So now the Gemara tells a story which also has to do with that pasuk about the Rishoyim roaming around in the darkness. So now the Gemara brings a story about it. Rav Elazar b'Rav Shimon Ashkachlar who paragavna the Kartofis Gavna. Rav Elazar b'Rav Shimon met up with a parhagavna, which Rashi says, Mamuna Shomelach, he's a royal appointee whose job is to catch thieves. So Rav Elazar asks, how do you think you're going to be able to prevail against them? How are you going to be able to understand, to figure out their plots and their schemes and whatever, and just stay one step ahead of them? Aren't they compared to wild animals? Both sumas kochai seyars, we just said that they're compared to wild animals that roam at night. The ikadami mahai krokomalei. Others say he ordered him a different pasuk. The pashtus, we have to understand that this paragavna must have been a yid. Or maybe not. I mean, by that time, the Torah, the Tanakh have been translated into Greek, maybe, but the pashtus, the guy was a yid. Anyway, ikadami mahai krokomalei. Others say he ordered him a different pasuk and tell him. Yere v'mister ka'aya besukai, the Russia hides and ambushes in secret like a lion in its thicket to go and catch prey in the same way the Rishoyim ambush the people in order to rob them. So you have to be worried. Duma Shaklet Sadikir Shavkas Rishi. How do you know when you're arresting people that you're getting the right people? Maybe you got the wrong person. Maybe you're accidentally arresting a tzaddik and letting the Rosha go free. Amalei my umai eved. So the guy says, what should I do? Hamina de Malkahu. I have orders from the king. I have to do this. So I have to do this. So what should I do in order to make sure, as you say, that I catch the right thief? Omale, so Omar said, Rabbi Elazar answers him, come, I'll teach you how to do it. Go into a store. Chanus in Gemara terminology often means not just a store, but a tavern where people drink, a restaurant or a bar or whatever. So go in at 4 hours of the day, let's say 10 o'clock in the morning, into an establishment, yeah, where they drink.
Could be a store or
in those times apparently it was like both. A store would do double duty like that, yeah.
Right.
So go into the store at that, go into the store, into the tavern or whatever at that time. If you see a person who's drinking wine at that time of day, and you also see that he's holding the cup in his hand and he's falling asleep, ask about him and find out what the story is. If he's a young Talmid Chacham, the Nayim, and he's sleepy, why would he be sleepy at 10 o'clock in the morning? Akdumi, Kodim Legirse, it's very likely that he woke up early to start learning while it was still dark, and therefore by 10 o'clock in the morning, he's tired. Actually, by the way, a couple of Mephoshim point out that the Gemara in Psachim tells us that Talmid Chachamim usually eat during the Shah Hamishis or Shah Shishis. Their main meal of the day is during the fifth or sixth hour. The Gemara brings over there that Shah Revius, the fourth hour of the day, is Maicho Kolodim, is when most people eat their main meal, but the Talmid Chachamim would eat during the fifth or the sixth hour. The Alter Rebbe brings in Tanya that this was an example of a Skafia. They would have to hold themselves back from eating for a couple of hours in order to subjugate the Yetzer Hara. So then why are we talking about over here about the fourth hour? So there's a couple of possibilities. So sometimes there are some who eat Bashar Revius, and you could have that even they, the Rav Yaakov Emden gives an answer that after all, they might eat a little bit before their main meal. And then also there's a point that actually I think the Magen Avraham makes a point that when we say the fifth or the sixth or whatever hour, we mean from when they woke up. So therefore, if Talmid Chacham wakes up extra early to learn Torah, then for him, 10 o'clock in the morning is already the sixth hour of his day. Anyway. So in that case, then you know that it's legitimate that he's tired at that time. He wasn't up at night for nefarious purposes. Don't bother with him. Be poilu. If you find that he's a day worker, that he's the kind of person who hires himself out by the day, then also, kodim ka'ovid at midday, he may well have woken up early to do his work. Yes, we said before that they're only obligated to come to work at Alois HaShachar or Netzacham or whatever. But nevertheless, it might happen that they were hired to do a job that begins earlier, and therefore by 10 o'clock in the morning, they're tired. So then you know that he's legit. If you find that he's the kind of person whose work is normally done at night, you didn't hear now if he was doing work at night, then wouldn't you expect to hear noises from his house? No, Radudi Radid, it might be that, for example, he was doing work of making copper wires or iron wires or whatever to make, for example, Rashi says to make needle. So now this kind of thing is quiet work that can be done at night. So in other words, you would say, well, if he's working at night, then why, and therefore he's tired in the daytime, then why didn't you hear noise of banging or whatever from his house? Because he may be doing work in the house that's quiet like that, like, for example, making needles. The Eloi, said the laws of Rav Shimon, tells the guy, if none of the above, Ganvahu, then you know he's a Ganav. He must have been, by process of elimination, he must have been up during the night stealing from people, whether a highway robber or whether tunneling into people's houses or whatever. So then the taf say, and then you should arrest him. Actually, Ben Yehoyada makes the point. We don't mean arrest him and right away execute him on that. There's many other reasons, after all. You could have, let's say, for example, he might be a regular person and that day he has a headache or something. So it means, in other words, at that point, arrest him and interrogate him to find out what the story is. But in other words, if it's any of the other ones, you can leave him alone in the first place. But if not, then at least take him in for questioning. Ishtama Milsebe Malka, eventually they heard about this thing in the palace, read by the emperor, Omru, so they said, Kraina de Igerta Iula Hevi Pravanka, as the expression goes, the one who reads the letter should be the messenger. So if Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon has such great ideas of how to ferret out the thieves, then he should be the one who has the job. So they put him in charge. He's now the chief of police. He's the one responsible for making sure that these criminals get arrested and brought to justice. Sholach Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha. Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha sent him a very short message. Chometz ben Yayin. You're like vinegar, the son of wine. You're Rosha, the son of a tzaddik. Your father, Rabbi Shimon ben Yechoi, was the great tzaddik. And you're nothing compared to him. Now, how could Rabbi Shimon ben Korcha say something like that? For one thing, Rabbi Shimon ben Korcha was Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon's Rebbe. So he has the right to talk to him sharply like that. He says, I must at the Moser, Amashallah, Tain al Hariga, how long are you going to give over our Hashem's people, the Jewish people, to be killed? Fine, you're saying they're only going to be interrogated, but you and I both know that once they fall into the hands of the government, they're not getting out of it so easily. Shalach Leis, Rabbi Elazar sent him back a message. I'm only removing the thorns like the Rishoyim from the vineyard. The Jewish people are compared to Hashem's vineyard. Ki kerem Hashem tzrokes beis Yisrael, as the Pasuk says. So therefore, I'm clearing out the thorns. In fact, he's continuing on the theme that Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha had said. Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha is saying, Marashah explains, you're saying that I'm vinegar, the son of wine, as if like the wine is spoiling for me. No, you know what's making the wine spoil? The thorns that are attacking the grapes in the vineyard. I'm getting rid of the thorns in that way. The vineyard will produce good wine. So he sent him back to him. No. Hashem, who owns the vineyard, let him come and remove his thorns. In other words, not your business to do that. You should leave that up to Hashem rather than being involved with massacring Jews to the government. Now, in fact, in principle, the halacha, you notice over here, you have a dalet and a hey, you have ein mishpat ner mitzvah on what Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha is saying. That the fact is, in general, you can't do that. So Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon, he held the halacha that there's a situation like this. He could be absolutely certain, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, that the people he's getting are rishoyim, but nevertheless, in an ordinary case, you're not allowed to do that. To master a yid to the government, as we learned at the end of Bava Kamma, is indeed a very, very serious thing. With that said, though, there are, for example, there are posts from Achronim, Rav Moshe has a tshuva on the subject, the Shevet Alevi has a tshuva on the subject. For example, is a person allowed to work for the IRS as a tax assessor, where he's going to check whether people have filed their returns properly. And both of them say yes for a variety of reasons, but I think the Shevet Alevi says, l'chatchila, it's not a job for a good Jewish boy, but if he has the job already, then it's fine, he can keep it. One day, a certain laundryman, a poshut yid, met up with Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon, Omar, and he used the same nickname on him, vinegar son of wine. Omar said, Rabbi Elazar says, "Midchutz of kolahai, he's so chutz b'dekshram in Yerushiyahu, he's obviously a Rosha." It's one thing that Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha is saying it as a Talmud Chacham, and in fact as my Rebbe, so he has a right to say such a thing, but not this poshut yid. And also Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha is saying the reason behind it because you're Moser Amash Yisrael Lahariga. This guy is not even mentioning that, so it's just he wants to be mavazin. So he figures that Tashmamin or Rashiahu, so Omar Lahu, so he says to the soldiers who were with him, Tipsuhu, arrest him. And Tipsuhu, and they arrested him. Lavasa de Nochdaite, after Rabbi Elazar calmed down, Ozo Basri the Poruke, the fact is, Dine Malchus are that they don't need Eden Basra or anything. The government law at that time was they don't need that kind of thing. And Dine de Malchus are Dine, so therefore, it was to that extent it was legitimate that they should arrest him and they might convict him even without a trial, but nevertheless, the Ritva goes on and says, in places where the law is that you need a trial and you need a conviction, then you taka need that. And if the government executes somebody without that, then it's taka not Dine de Malchusa and they're stam murder. So here, Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon figured that's Roman law, so therefore, dinner machos a dinner. Anyway, lebosse v'noch daite, but after he calmed down, also basri l'koruke, he went to go and try to redeem the guy from jail, v'leimotzi, but he wasn't able to. Kori alei, so he said on him, he said, here you have the pasuk, shermit people l'shone, a person who guards his mouth and his tongue, shermit mitzores nafshei, saves himself from tzores. So in other words, this guy, if he'd held his tongue, then he wouldn't have been in trouble in the first place. So Rashi says he's saying on the laundry man that if he had been quiet, he never would have been in trouble. Maharshal says he's actually talking about himself, that I shouldn't have spoken up. I shouldn't have said that they should arrest him. And now I feel bad. Mm-hmm. Now I'm going to end up causing the guy to be killed. So they hang the guy, come to his skiff of a kabachi, and Rav Elazar was standing there by under the gallows and crying that he thought he'd had an innocent. He had executed. Omrulay, they told him, Rebbe, al yera beinecha, Rebbe, don't feel bad about it. Shahuvnoi, balu naira amayrosim yemek aporim. He and his son both were mezana with a naira amayros on Yom Kippur, so that there would be high skila for that. And it was on Yom Kippur, which makes it even worse, and therefore he taka deserved to be killed. There is actually an interesting girsa that Bach brings a girsa that Omar Lay, the guy himself, when he was on the gallows and not yet dead, then he told Rav Elazar personally, he was mizvade. They said his final vigil about what he actually did. Yeah. Tosfos elsewhere discusses in that case, then why is he being hanged? On the face of it, then he should be chayiv skila. And there's a few possibilities. One of them is you have an opinion in the Mishnah that everybody who gets skila afterward, their body is hanged. So therefore, this is me'emeh. And there's a few other possible answers as well. Another answer is that his son was mezana with her first, and then by that time she's only an eishes ish, and therefore he's not a naira marasa anymore, and therefore she's not a psula anymore. Therefore he's chayiv chenek, and hanging is like chenek. Anyway, Hiniach Yodi Abnei Me'av, Rav Elazar put his hand on his stomach, but Omar, he says, Sisu, Bnei Me'ai Sisu, you, my stomach and my insides should be happy. Well, Mas Sveikas Shalachem Kach, Madach, your doubtful cases, I only wasn't sure whether the guy is a Rosha, and it's so, and it came out, Hashem arranged that I said that I did the right thing. Vadoris Shalachem, when you're certain all these times, when I was certain about these people that I arrested until now, Allah has Kama V'Kama, how much more so that I was right, after all, that I was removing the thorns from the vineyard. Mufta Hani Bachem, so he says, I can be certain about you, my stomach, about my innards, Shain Rima Vaseleya Shalatas Bachem, that no worms or maggots will have any control over you, that my body will stay intact and none of them will attack it after I pass away.
This is the famous.
This is the Gemara Asra, Akilo Hakim Lam Yasvadite. Nevertheless, his mind was still not at ease. Ashkiyu Sama Deshenza. So he had them one day give him something to put him to sleep, an anesthetic. By Lula Besa Deshisha, they brought him into a marble house, which is airtight, so that way he wouldn't get injured by air from the outside. He wouldn't get infected or whatever. But Kordel Kriya, they cut open his stomach, have a makum, and they terba. They were taking out baskets upon baskets of fat, as I was going to say later. He was very fat. Well, most of the Shimsha, the Tamuz Vav, they put them out in the sun. Tamuz and of time, but they masukhi, and they didn't spoil. So the Gemara asks, what's the chiddush? So that showed, in other words, that Taka he's not going to spoil after he passes away. The Gemara asks, what's the chiddush? Kol tarba nami lo yisriach. No fat spoils in the sun. It melts, doesn't spoil. The answer is kol tarba lo yisriach, shuraiki sunki masriach. But you always have, red lines in it. You have blood vessels that run through it. They spoil. Hocha apagab de'ika shuraiki sunki. Here there are shuraiki sunki. It would include blood vessels. It would include muscles, etc. Even though it was loy masriach, it didn't spoil. Koryan Nafshe, said of Elazar ben Rav Shimon, applied to himself a pasuk, ask the Sori, Yishkan Labetach, as David says in Tillin, also my flesh will dwell securely, that just like David is saying, that he wasn't attacked by worms and whatever after he passed away, therefore Marshah is therefore the Elazar ben Rav Shimon is saying the same thing. I can be certain that the same thing that after Sori Yishkan Labetach, that I won't spoil. Later on, the Gemara is going to tell us that at one point a worm came out of his ear, but at least that his body is not going to rot. This is where we have that tzaddikim's bodies stay intact, and we have a number of stories of that. We have when the Rebbe Rashab, they had to move his kever 20 years after he was in Stalik because the Russians wanted to build a road or something through there, and they found his body was fully intact. There's a number of other cases, a number of other stories of tzaddikim like that, where they had to unbury them many years or even centuries later, and they found that their bodies are still intact. So we'll continue the story tomorrow, Rav Shimon.